Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Twitter.com/Joy Keys, and you can become a fan on Facebook. Just look up Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. And also, I'd love to hear from you. You can send me an email. Email me at SaturdaysWithJoyKeys@hotmail.com. And today, if you want to call in, the call-in number is 646-929-0368. Again, thank you so much for listening. Close to 80,000 downloads of the podcast. And I just want to say thank you, thank you, and thank you for your support. This is the fourth year of the show, and so really excited what's coming up in the new year. So please stay tuned and follow on Twitter. As you know, I do a lot of giveaways, books, CDs. I want to give a shout-out to Anika and Sherry that just won recently Sonia Sanchez's recent book, Morning Haiku. So congratulations to you two for winning. And stay tuned, we'll be giving some more things away. This morning we're going to be talking about the Sudan. Many of you may not realize that the Sudan is in two parts right now. There's Northern Sudan and Southern Sudan. And so today I'll be speaking with a musician. She's been on before, and she was on before talking about Sudan 365. And that was a movement to try to get people to vote about the split. About 2 years ago. So I had her back on because she has some new songs. And that was her song Fugu from her album with the Nubatones. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. So let's start with your name because I don't want to mispronounce it. How do you pronounce your name correctly?
My name is Al Sara. My family and friends call me Sara, but so Sara to Al Sara is like Kate to Catherine.
Okay, and what does it mean in your language?
Al Sara is an old Sudanese name. It means one who brings you joy.
Well, looky here, and you're on Joy's show.
Exactly.
You are bringing joy. Well, you definitely bring joy with your music, so that's why I wanted to have you on. I mean, I had you on, really talking about a lot of political things, but your music is great, too. I love your voice. I love the messages that you have in your music. So, and this one, the Fugu song, what are you saying in the song, basically? I know that the meeting is Wake Up and Shams Al-Huria. I don't know if I pronounced that right.
Oh, you did. No, you did. You did a good job.
Okay,
Freedom Sun.
Yeah. The whole idea
of the song is like the time has come for the subject that's been acted upon to take charge of his or her own destiny. So it's about the arrival of the time, really inspired by a lot of the undercurrents that are happening all over Sudan and all over Africa, just kind of moments of risings. And I know some people are like, well, I've spoken to some activists who are like, don't say wake up. I know I'm awake already. I was like, yeah, I know, but to the rest of the world to wake up and see that the fact that there's so much energy and synergy and revolution brewing under the surface in Sudan and all over Africa, from Somalia to Congo, to, everywhere. That was kind of the idea of the song.
Well, some people are awake and some people are asleep. I mean, and
that's
as I always say on my show, that's just the case. And also, sometimes you don't know you don't know. I mean, I do a lot of shows about a lot of different topics, and I feel like I'm very well read, but I can always, always learn something. And all the time when I'm doing shows, I'm learning things. I mean, from, uranium in the Native American lands to more about the Sudan, about Uganda, about politics in South Africa, about music in the Netherlands. I mean, so there's always something to learn. There's always a chance to wake up. You know, I want to bring Hajuj into the conversation. This morning, I also have a young filmmaker and activist from the group Garisna. And now, how do you want me to call you, Hajuj or Hisham, Haj Omar? What name do you want to go by today?
Hajuj. Hajuj is what my family call me, and it's the name I use when I do my activist work. So, Hajuj.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about people waking up. Your organization started with the vote, helping the people get out and learn more about the political situation and empower them. What specifically did the group do? How did they get people to vote? How did they protect people? Because a lot of people were arrested for their defiance. Talk about this a little bit.
Okay, so Garisna is not a group or an organization. It's a movement. It's a nonviolent direct action movement that when it started, the aim of the group was to use the elections for people to vote out the National Congress Party, which is the ruling party in Sudan. And it was from the group believing that no progress can happen in Sudan before we have democracy, and that's not going to happen while this party is in power. So it was a group that was led by a group of university students. It was and is still led by people who are 19 years old to 22. And they started during the elections. In 2010, there was a national elections, and it was going to be before the vote for the country, for the South, that they get the right to vote if they want to split or not. So in 2010, there was the national elections, and that's when the group started. And it started by telling people, first, that you need to register to vote. So that was the first campaign. And the second campaign was to get people to vote. Unfortunately, the elections went bad, and it was faked, and the Congress Party is still in power.
Well, I want to play the song "Vote" that you did the video on. So I want to just play that for the audience. I did play this before, but I want to play it again. I played it when you were on before.
Let me cast my vote on this. Give my people hope on this. I spoke on this and hope it gets focused on like most of this that occur in Africa. We gon' try to be socialist. Sudan, we tryna keep together. Other folks, they hope we split. So don't you sit up on your couch. Get outside your house and stand right next to your brother, man. Whether he from north or south, it's not about your color and religion. It's just politics. We could end the starving if involved in being part of it. This is at the heart of it. Vote is just the start of it. Pieces of the puzzle put together view the larger picture. We anonymous when talked about on CNN. Proper camera propaganda. I'm starting to see a trend. Future we gon' need it sent. Africa the powerhouse. We view the globe. It's time they know we're out of that. They power's out. Let me hear you shout it out. Democracy for all to stand. If that it we will fall. So together as it's all the same.
I mean, we have an issue in America with people voting. I mean, people don't vote. Not even 50% of the American population, I mean, these are true statistics, do not vote in elections. And less people vote in America during, like, local elections, say, like, for city council or the mayor or governor. People usually only get out when it's the presidential race. Now, there's two presidents in the Sudan. The northern Sudan is Bashir, and then Mahardit, is that how you say it? I'm not sure. Am I pronouncing it correctly? And in the south Sudan?
It's Silva Kiir in South Sudan.
Silva Kiir, okay. So now do you feel that he's doing a good job in the South or he's not? He's just like the other overall party that...
So South Sudan is new. It's a new country.
Right.
They have potential and they have to deal with a lot of things. It's a fact that SPLM went from being a rebel group that wrote... peace and prosperity and independence to South Sudan. Now they have the challenge, are they able to bring democracy and they be able to give up power? So I think the real test would be when time comes to have a real election and allow other political parties that would challenge them. So until now, they're not doing that and they're acting like they are de facto dictatorship because of what they are. But hopefully in the future that will change. And it's a new country, so we're just giving them benefit of the doubt. It's hopefully they're going in the right direction. It's hard to tell. It's just...
Yeah, it's just early. Well, I just want to let the audience know one of the biggest issues is the oil. There's a lot of power in oil. And recently, I know in Philly.com, there was an article that supposedly the North was blocking shipments of oil from the South, even going as far as capturing boats that had supplies, oil in the docks. Al-Sahar or Hajuj, are you familiar with this issue?
Yes, I am. And oil, sadly, oil is one of those things that you only need like 2% of the population to make enough money to run the country. So you really don't need your country. And when you have oil, it's hard for a country to have oil and become democratic. Because when you don't need your population, it's hard for you to be democratic. So oil brings
about... Right, because it's not agricultural-based. It's not agricultural where you need manpower as much as manpower.
Yeah, when you need all your whole population. So you're like... feel like the population is a burden on you, on the 2% that's needed to bring enough money for them to be okay. So it's hard to find a country that has oil and is democratic if it wasn't democratic before oil was found.
Al-Sahar, what is your opinion? Let me bring Al-Sahar into the conversation. I wanted to get her opinion about the matter. What do you feel about this issue of the oil and the blocking of the oil so that the South can continue to grow?
I mean, I feel like the whole issue of the oil, a lot of people were able, I think, could predict that this might potentially happen in the split because the split wasn't, you know, it wasn't there wasn't any full-on war, it wasn't really an amicable split. It was a split due to one side failing to meet all of the agreements that they had promised to make and the changes that they had promised to make. And the government of North Sudan has always had a tendency to have adolescent-like behavior when it comes to foreign policy.
I know that Bashir had mentioned before that he was going to give people dual citizenship, and then he revoked that. Is that true?
That is true. He has revoked that. Mm-hmm. He's also tried to repossess a lot of South Sudanese citizens' properties that were already living in the north after the split. There's been a lot of issues like that. And I feel like... That's a result because we've never really addressed the core of the issues. You know, like while the country split in order to try to like find reconciliation, eventually there was never a full on acknowledgement of the kind of racism that was being practiced by the North Sudanese government. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I just want to say the issue of racism as an African-American, you know, here in America, we deal with a lot of racism. And when we sometimes look out from America to other countries where sometimes the citizens look similar to us, it's hard for us to comprehend when you say racism. Can you define that a little further for Americans when you say racism in Sudan? Is it the same? Is it because of skin tone? Is it because of ethnicity, cultural issues? Just define that a little more for us here.
It's a combination of ethnicity, tribalism, but mostly a combination of culture, you know, like linguistic differences, religious differences, ethnic differences, but predominantly tribal differences. You know, Sudan until recently is a really tribally oriented country. Like our concept of a national identity is really new and was never really fully developed. So a lot of our racism stems from that. And it's not, you know, the people don't look that different. But when you only have one particular tribe or two particular tribes that are in power, the kind of prejudices that would be practiced that wouldn't necessarily take on mass, that wouldn't be considered racism, you know, in daily practice because someone's not in charge. Once that person's in power, now you're practicing full-on racism, you know, when you...
Yeah.
There's only one group in charge now. As, you know, even though when you look at everybody, you can't necessarily tell the difference, you know, unless you're from that area and really culturally steeped in it. But you can't, it's not racism like in America where it's like white against black. It's more complicated than that.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me tell the audience that the International Criminal Court did bring Bashir up on war crime charges in 2008. Also in 2010, again, brought him up on war crimes. And they were stating that only like 17% of the population live on less than $1.25 a day. And issues in terms of the split of the country, I was reading that the British in like the 1920s had actually banned people from the north going to the south. They said it was because of disease, but really it was about religious issues, that the north was mostly Muslim and the south was were Christians. Hajuj, are you familiar with this historical information at all?
Yes, it's definitely true. My understanding of it was the tribes in the south, the British government was not able to control them because of the way the tribes were structured. In the north, because we had different civilizations where we had a certain hierarchy that was easy for the British to control the top of the pyramid, and then they control everybody. So what happened was when they couldn't control the south, they didn't want people from the north interacting a lot with people from the south because they thought that would bring revolt against them. So they did not allow anybody from the north going south, did not allow anybody from the south going north, and they built universities and schools in the north and nothing in the south. So when they left, the marginalization had already started, where people from the north went to schools, we had a very good university, and we had a system going on, and people from the south had nothing. So they had to catch up.
Yeah.
So
I want to play one of Al-Sara's songs, Nuban Utu.
Yeah, Nuban Utu.
Okay.
If Sara can talk a little bit about that, about how it's Nubian and all that.
Okay. Okay. Why don't you say your...
We'll talk after the song.
Right before the song started?
I just wanted, if Sara can talk about the what the song is, and she can talk about that.
Oh, okay. Okay, go ahead.
So Hajjaj is really invested in this song because, you know, it's in his native language.
Okay.
So it's in his tribe's native language. So in the Nubian, you know, the Nubian people of North Sudan and South Egypt, you know, they have a different dialects of a commonly spoken language. This particular song is in the language of the Mahas people, which is a tribe about 10 hours north of Khartoum driving. And there's a long history for the Nubian people along the Nile that kind of started with the building of the High Dam in the 60s, started a mass displacement of the Nubian people and kind of began the cultural and historical and linguistic loss of the language. Nubian languages were banned in school for many years, you know, in order to help people, quote-unquote, create a more national identity by only speaking Arabic, and only speaking language.
That's a form of control. That's a form of oppression used all over the globe, you know, take people's language, take their music, take their dance, take their art, take whatever that makes them unique, strip them and try to make them homogenized. So that's used, you know, all over the globe. You said the group, his tribe, the Mahas, they're remnants of Kwamhat Bishari tribe. Does that sound familiar? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
You just said.
We'll have to do some more research on that. But the oppression, control, isolation, like you said, moving people, taking them of their land and moving them, stripping their language, those things are used. And that's why education is so important, that we learn about things that are going on around the globe, because then you can say, oh, my God, this oppression is not new. This oppression is not, I'm not the only one being oppressed. You know, there's like a handbook almost of oppression, and that it's not something new. So when you think of conspiracy theories and things happening maybe in your country, if you're in Italy or Japan or China or, you know, Brazil or wherever you are, in Mexico, and things are happening to you, you say, darn, why is this happening? This is crazy. If you learn that it's happening other places in the globe, you can be like, oh, whoa. Then you wake up and you're like, oh, my God, okay, this is wrong. This has to stop. You know, the waking
totally
up
agree.
Is sometimes, you know, crazy. But
yeah, and creating a sense of unity. Yeah, and also just kind of, you know, so the song is, you know, calling for the Nubian people to unite, you know, unite behind the love for their language, the love of your history, the love of your ethnicity, and the love of who you are, and how unity is really what makes people strong, you know, what makes people come together. And having the song in Nubian was really important to me, you know, just to have some of our, I wish I spoke more, I wish I was able to sing in every tribal language in Sudan, you know, in order to kind of try to, my focus as an artist is always to highlight that the diversity is the key to our strength, as opposed to trying to eliminate diversity by creating one unison, you know, one unity. When you do that, people don't feel like, you know, they see themselves in the culture around
yeah.
them. And, you know, the Nubian people have always kind of, especially in North Sudan, the displacement that happened after the High Dam was built, everyone feels like Nubian is this old ancient thing that, you know, used to be in the past thousands and thousands of years ago, where it's like a living population and a living people. And, you know, there's constant exploitation from Egypt and from the government of Sudan, of the land, of the area, of the history, and, you know, no acknowledgement of what happened to the actual people and what is happening not right now to them.
Hajime, I want to bring you in the conversation. Let me ask you a question first. What, in response to what you're saying, that, you know, oppression is still happening, so now what is GLSNA going to do from today forward to deal with this? What steps are they taking?
Okay. Before I talk about GLSNA, I just want to say that the government of Sudan is still building all these dams, other than the Great Dam that was built back in the 60s and 70s. So...
Mm-hmm.
And that's displacing a lot of people and destroying Nubian history. And that's a really important thing. And there's a big movement by the Nubian people trying to stop the dams. And right now there's a group that's called Al-Manasir who's been occupying for the last 50 days of occupation. And they're calling for the government to give them, to allow them to live close to where they used to live before they new dam and created this lake, so their land is underwater, but they refuse to leave that area. They want to live next to the dam, and the government sold that area to some foreign investments, and they're refusing to leave. And it's been 50 days.
Well, you know, China controls, I believe, one of the largest pipelines, the oil pipelines there, so there's a lot of foreign collaboration in the oppression of these people. Like you said, they just don't care about them. People need to be close to water. You know, they need to be able to survive. That water is a key to life, so to speak. So,
And historically, that land is really important because that's the historical land of the Nubian people, and the Nubian history has not been studied enough.
There's more pyramids, for example, in northern Sudan in the Nubian region than all over Egypt put together.
Well, that's probably why they want to control it, because they want to control information. Again, going back to knowledge is power, you have control of information, then you control the people. You control their minds. You then control their spirits, because then if their minds are not open, their spirit is down. You know what I'm saying? It's just that's just the key. And in America, too, education is a major issue. I mean, kids don't have this books. You know, they have to share things. Everybody doesn't have a computer. I mean, computers can be made so cheap these days. And then having the computer, having access to the internet, getting information, and also reading different kinds of information. This is the key. I know one of the things I learned in political science is we read things that match up with our ideas that we already have. So it's not just seeking information that looks like, okay, yeah, I agree with that, so I'm going to read that. Reading things that you don't agree with is also just as important. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I just want to put that out there. I want to play another one of your songs. We only have about 5 minutes left. If you're just tuning in, thank you so much. You can call in 646-929-0368. Also, I want to encourage you to follow Outsider on Twitter. Alsada 5000. That's the Twitter hook. Hajuj, are you on Twitter at all? I know Girifna is on Facebook.
Yeah, Girifna is on Facebook. It's Facebook/Girifna. And we have a website, Girifna.com. It's G-I-R.
And you're on Twitter, right?
And we have a Twitter account. If you go to the website,
okay,
you'll find the Facebook and the Twitter. The website is girifna.com, girifna.com.
Okay, great. So you guys want to check that out if you're listening. Follow them, support them, learn about them, you know, get the information. Again, knowledge is power. I just want to play another song from your recent album. Now, also after we play your song real quick, we'll just give a shout-out to the Nubatones.
Yes, yes.
They were jamming on that last. I had to play the last. I know it was a little long for the audience, but I had to play the last. They were jamming. Why don't you tell me real quick the members in Nubatones? Give a shout out to them.
I have big shout out to the members of the Nubatones. Moena Kujovi on bass, Rami El Asir on percussion, Haig Manukian on oud, and Kareem Florima on vocals and keyboard. And of course, me, yours truly, on lead vocals. So that is the Nubatones.
So now tell us real quick, where are you going to be performing next? I heard somewhere at the Lincoln.
It's going to be at the Kennedy Center. Our next show is going to be in Washington, D.C., Sunday, January 29th from 6 to 7 at the Millennium Stage. They have daily free shows there, so it's free. Come one, come all, come enjoy yourself, come get ready to dance. We start at 6 p.m. sharp and end at 7 p.m. sharp, so no African time.
Now, but, Hajuj, I want to bring him in. Hajuj, you're working on the film and some animation. Tell us just real quick about your coming projects, your film projects.
I'm writing my first short. It's going to be a narrative, and it's about, it's going to be set in New York. It's about immigrants in New York and all our experiences and stuff. So hopefully that'll come out sometime this year, I'm hoping. And I'm
okay,
working
well,
on the small animation. I will, definitely.
What's the animation about?
The animation is, it's the new one I'm working on is actually the music video for one of our saddest songs. It's called a song called Jamila. And it's more like a dreamy, it's going to be animation plus some footage. And it's more like a dreamy, there's a mermaid that ends up running and flying, so yeah, it should be.
Oh my God!
Song.
You know,
yeah.
It's so funny. It's so funny that you say that because I was going to play Jamila at the end of this interview. So it's just great. You have to do the animation because I need to see it.
Great.
Okay, so I want to thank you guys for coming on today. Everybody, follow them on Twitter, Facebook. Check out their website, outsada.com, garifna.com, and have a wonderful Saturday. Follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys on Twitter. Okay, I'll talk to you soon. Stay tuned. We're doing another segment. Thank you, Outsada and Hajuj, for coming on today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Joy.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye, have a great day.
شكلك سهرة من الحبر سايح وملا صفحات كتاب الرايح هل انت حلم في عالم الواقع
to me.